All right, welcome to the Puck Authority podcast. My name is Justin Levine, managing editor of the Puck Authority, along with David Sitz, our prospects writer, and Chase Kimball, who focuses on the Carolina Hurricanes, amongst many other subjects. Now, we haven't talked in a while, so we're going to start off with some NHL draft stuff before we get into the free agency, which is going to make this really interesting with all the signings, offer sheet ideas that are coming out. But again, before we do, let's get into the NHL draft a little bit, since we haven't really spoken since that point, where Jack Hughes went number one to New Jersey, followed by Kaapo Kakko to New York, and the list went on. So let's dig right in with any thoughts. Feel free to share.
Before we even go any further with this, I personally think that the biggest surprise, and something that honestly I still can't get over, was how far Dustin Wolf fell. I mean, I personally thought that he was the best goaltender in the draft, even ahead of Spencer Knight, which I know is a little bit, people may not agree with that, but to me, he was one of the best goaltenders in the draft by a mile. I mean, his statistics surpassed Carter Hart at the same age with the Everett Silvertips. I think he learned a lot from Carter Hart serving as his backup, and, you know, he was definitely, I'd say, even the goaltender of the year in the CHL. His stats surpassed all other CHL goaltender. So really, it surprised me that he fell to 214 to the Calgary Flames. I really think they got a steal over there.
Yeah, absolutely. I really think that I think that some people might think that Knight jumped a little bit higher than they thought that he was going to go. But man, Wolf in the 200s, that's an absolute bargain, I think.
I mean, watching the draft, I'm thinking, okay, how far is he going to fall? He's not going to fall past the second round. He's not going to fall past the third round. And then I'm looking, and it's the last five picks, and I'm like, if he doesn't get drafted, I don't know what to even say. It was just, I was so surprised that he fell that far. I mean, you're right. I think some people will say that Knight was definitely a bit of a reach, but I think that, you know, I think that Florida wasn't really drafting necessarily on best player available. I really think they thought that's the guy they needed. That was their goaltender of the future. But I mean, some will say that, you know, he was the best player available. In a few years, Knight could end up looking like the absolute steal of the draft. I mean, scouts rave about this guy. They say that he's one of the most athletic goaltenders since Jonathan Quick, and he perhaps may be the best American-born goaltender since Quick. So I think he's a guy that we definitely have to keep an eye on. He could be even a steal at 13. So interesting thought there.
Absolutely. Spencer Knight with the United States U18 National Development Team program, drafted by the Florida Panthers with pick number 13 of the night in Vancouver.
Yeah, I mean, and you got to think about this too. You got to think that goaltenders take a lot longer to develop than normal prospects. So, you know, the Flames are a team that could really benefit from having Wolf step in to their team. You know, a few years down the road, they're going to get some serviceable time out of Talbot. They'll get some serviceable time out of Rittich. But then, you know, he is primed to really take over that crease and be the guy there for a long time coming if he pans out.
Honestly, just based on his statistics, I haven't seen a goaltender perform that well at that age in a long time. I mean, you know, people thought that after the Silvertips lost Hart, you know, there would be a bit of a struggle maybe defensively and in the crease with the Silvertips. But I mean, Wolf just, he took the starting job and ran with it. I really think he did win WHL Goaltender of the Year, but in my books, it was Dustin Wolf by a mile.
A question for David now. If we focus on the Dallas Stars, number 18 pick for a moment in the first round, Thomas Harley from the Mississauga Steelheads going to Dallas. Let's dig in a little bit about where that move perhaps makes sense, given that the two of us both covered Thomas Harley and the Steelheads this past season at the Paramount Fine Food Center in Mississauga.
I mean, like you said, we'd spent a lot of time covering the Steelheads, so we got to see a lot of Thomas Harley. And, you know, I think he fell exactly where, I think he got selected pretty much exactly where he should have been. I mean, he's a great defenseman for the Steelheads. He's a real offensive-minded defenseman, and that's probably what I noticed most about him while watching him, is how seamlessly he transitions to the offense. You know, I always said that he's kind of like the fourth forward on the team. You know, when there's a rush, he's right there with it. If there's a rebound, you know, you'll see him right at the net ready to tap it in. So I really do like that aspect of his game. I like how involved he is offensively. And while he does kind of move forward and you could sometimes see him closer to the net, he's also very reliable around the blue line. So you're also going to see him creating plays, especially on the power play. Definitely a quarterback on the power play. I think he still has some things to work out defensively. I think he could be a little bit more aggressive and maybe use his size a bit more to his advantage. But really, I think he's on the right path right now. He's, you know, he's definitely has the skill to be an offensive player at the NHL level. He could handle a lot of minutes, as seen. The Steelheads relied on him a lot. So he clearly, he could handle lots of minutes. And he has the offensive skill that I think is necessary for him to become an NHL player. I think the biggest thing that he needs to work out now is just, you know, smoothing out some of his defensive characteristics a bit more before I really say that, you know, he's a surefire top four NHL defenseman. Right now it looks like he will be, but I think there's just is a few aspects of his game that he definitely does need to fix up a little bit.
Right, and this one for Chase, Ryan Suzuki, joining the Carolina Hurricanes, selected 28th overall from the Barrie Colts of OHL. Chase, what are your immediate thoughts on this selection with yet another Suzuki soon to join the National Hockey League in the coming years?
Oh, man, I think this is a great bargain pick for the Hurricanes. You know, I think that if you would have said that this would be where the Hurricanes were picking at the start of the year, that, you know, some people would not have believed that. I think they got a really great pick, you know, late in the first round. I think that he is going to be quality talent for him. His speed is great. He has a great shot. I got to see him play at the Hurricanes prospect development camp, and man, the kid flies. He's doing great. I think that he's going to be a very quality addition for the Hurricanes, and he had a great year for himself this year. Mm-hmm. He really impressed. So I think that, you know, he's a player that could have gone earlier in the draft, and I think that the Hurricanes are very happy with their pick.
What do you think overall about the draft for the Hurricanes? Sorry, Justin. I'm intrigued to see what you thought about overall with the Hurricanes draft. I thought it was one of the best in the NHL, really.
Oh, man. Honka was a steal. I think that they got an absolute steal with him in the third round. That's great value for pick right there. They had him and Suzuki on the ice at the same time, the prospect camp, and man, they both looked great. Honka's speed is great also. These are guys that you're not going to see on the Hurricanes in the next year, maybe even the next 2 years, but you give it time and these are players that are going to impress, and the Hurricanes have a great young core that they're already building off of. And these are just two more, you know, quality talents. But I think that they, you know, and even in the second round, you know, they trade away, they got some assets, you know, they said there wasn't any picks that they were dying to make right then. And they had some teams that were willing to offer them some more assets. So, you know, you if your guy is not available right then that you want, you know, take some more, you know, have some more assets at your disposal that you can use later on. I think that they maneuvered this draft very, very well.
Couldn't agree more. Another thing I love, I think all three of their third round picks were great. I like Dominic Fensor that late. I think he was a great value pick. I did not expect him to even fall to the third round. Great value right there. But perhaps my favorite was 73rd overall. They picked Patrick Pistola. I was a huge fan of him this season. I had him in the first round. I thought he was a great player in Finland this season. And I was very surprised to see him fall so low. And I thought that the addition of him was one of the best moves they actually made during the draft. I think he's a great goal scorer. I'm really excited to see what he brings to the table. Alongside Blake Murray, who fell to the sixth round, who was another guy who I actually had him in the first round for the most part of the season. I thought he's a solid goal scorer, played on the Sudbury Wolves, slotted behind Quentin Byfield, so we didn't necessarily have all the attention this season. And I know he wasn't a point per game, but I think he had a great shot, solid playmaker, someone who I'm really intrigued to see how he takes that next step.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, really, aside from the drafts, they had a great weekend overall, too. The Patrick Marleau trade was a great deal for the Hurricanes, I think. You give up basically nothing. You're trading from a position of extreme strength to a team that is desperate to move a contract, and you get a first-round pick out of it.
Yeah, I love the addition of that first-round pick, especially, you know, over the course of the season. I wouldn't be surprised to see them, you know, try to pursue a couple big names. I mean, we've heard that they're are a couple names on the roster that they are trying to push out still. But, you know, as the season goes, I wouldn't be surprised to see them maybe even package one of their two first round picks in a deal, maybe to acquire some additional offense or maybe even a goaltender, whatever happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And this deal, you know, it came from a Canes team that isn't strapped for cash right now. But this buyout isn't going to hurt them when they need it, because this Canes team does have a lot of young talent that they're going to need to sign in the coming years. You know, you look at guys like, you know, Alex Nedeljkovic, he's going to need a new deal. Marty Nečas.
Yeah.
Hayden Fleury, Jake Bean. And then, you know, you have big contracts expiring in Hamilton and Falk. But I think that this deal is perfect. It gives them another huge piece to work with, and it doesn't hurt them right now.
Completely agree with that. I'm very I like what they did this offseason so far, and I'm intrigued to see if they try to, you know, acquire anyone else. I mean, I love the addition of Dzingel too, so it's going to be very interesting to see what they do leading up to training camp.
Speaking of Hurricane success, let's delve a little bit into the offer sheet in which the Montreal Canadiens handed to Sebastian Aho. Though the Canes would end up matching that sheet, giving him a new 5-year deal for this season and beyond. How do we feel on both ends as Montreal supposedly saw that this is where he wanted to go? Meanwhile, Don Waddell was completely opposed to it and saying that he wanted to stay put, and that they were able to very quickly close in on a new deal for him.
Yeah. So I just wrote about this, and my newest piece is going to be up on the site. Well, it'll be up as the time of this recording is out, but this is one of the rare times in the NHL where you see an RFA really control his own contract and get the exact, you know, term and numbers that he wants. And this, you know, the RFA system as it currently stands in the NHL, restricted free agents don't have very much leverage to work with. You know, they don't, it's not like they can talk to other teams, and it's not like, you know, their rights are stuck. Mm-hmm. So usually, you know, you see these guys take a lesser cap number usually, and, you know, at a longer term. But this offseason has really been a huge success for Sebastian Aho and his agent, because here's what I think happened. I think that Aho's agent went to Montreal, got a contract that Aho would sign, and then gave it to Aho, knowing full well that the Hurricanes would match. Because if the Hurricanes don't match, all of a sudden their franchise is in disarray. They had their great season for the first time forever, returning back to the playoffs, make it all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals, and then you lose your star player for a first, a second, and a third? Absolutely not. There's no way that they're not going to match.
Yeah, so, I agree with that.
Yeah, so they get Aho, the biggest deal with this, you know, and I think that no one is going to argue that Aho is a great value at $8.5 million a year. For sure. The big here is the term. It's 5 years. That'll put Aho straight into his first year of unrestricted free agency. So he will be due for a huge pay boost in 5 years, you know, unless something drastic happens. Mm-hmm. So this is exactly the deal that Aho wanted. And I don't know if you guys saw his tweet right afterwards, you know, right after this, the offer sheet was officially matched, but I'll read it for you. He said, "I'm grateful for the offer from the Montreal Canadiens, but it was always my hope to return to the Hurricanes. As a restricted free agent, I had limited options for moving along the process to get a deal done. It was always important to me to be on the ice for the first day of training camp. This entire situation has been very difficult for me and my family, and I'm happy that it is at an end. We have a young and exciting group in Carolina, and I can't wait to be there with my teammates and get to work. I love it in Raleigh, and I'm thrilled that we can continue to as what we started last season." So I think that really tells you all that you want to know. He didn't, you know, it's not like signing this offer sheet meant that he no longer wants to play in Carolina or that he's dying to play in Montreal. He got the term he wanted. He got the money that he wanted, and the situation's over. You know, being a free agent is stressful for these guys. You know, they can't play until this is all sorted out. So I think that he got exactly what he wanted.
I think Montreal did them a huge favor, because I think, you know, negotiations, I don't even believe that they would have been sorted out by now. I think they were definitely far apart in terms of contract. There was a lot of rumors and reports going around prior to the offer sheet saying that they only offered him, what was it, 5 or 6 million? So
yeah, 6.5.
6.5. Yeah. So there was clearly a lot of disagreement on both sides. I think Montreal did them a huge favor. What I disagree with, though, is you're hearing, I mean, if you look on Twitter, you're hearing a lot of people, you know, shitting on Marc Bergevin, saying, why didn't you offer him more? But I have to disagree there. I don't think it was offering more. I don't think would have done anything, because either way, the Hurricanes have the cap to match it. That was never going to be an issue. They've got cap space. Bergevin was smart in using signing bonuses as a tactic to actually push the deal through. If Carolina wasn't going to match the offer sheet for any reason, it wasn't going to be because of the cap. I think it was going to be because of the signing bonuses there, that they would have had some trouble matching financially. So people were saying that, you know, why didn't you offer? Who cares about an extra first-round pick? You know, it's Sebastian Aho. It's worth it. But I agree with what Bergevin said in his press conference. He didn't believe that moving up to that next threshold would matter because, again, they have the cap to match it. It was never going to be the cap that would be a big deterrent in the deal. It was the signing bonuses, and they offered what they could.
Yes, it was an example of, you know, financial strong-arming from an original six team, a team that's in a huge market, has plenty of money to throw around. Mm-hmm. But, you know, since Tom Dundon has come into the Hurricanes organization, you know, he has said that he is all in on this, that he is going to, you know, that he's really going to put money into this. And, you know, you look at this guy's investments in, you know, the football league. And then you think that he's not going to pay $21 million in signing bonuses for his, you know, major sports league team. No way. So I think that I really think that what this was it was a low risk, high reward situation for the Canadians. You know, really all that they have lost in this might be, you know, a little bit of respect from at least one general manager in the league. Yeah. I don't think that they were expecting this to work. I mean, if it did, you get Sebastian Aho. And if it didn't, then what'd you lose?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know Bergevin in his press conference was saying they expect it to work. But I mean, what are you going to say? You don't expect it to work? Exactly. You have to go in saying, you know, this is going to work. But I really agree with what he did. I mean, again, I like what you said. It was a high risk, low reward kind. I mean, low risk, high reward kind of situation there. I mean, what did he lose? Maybe, again, like you said, maybe the Carolina Hurricanes might not like them too much. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think another thing he did was, now, I think this kind of changed the narrative of RFAs. I mean, you're hearing a lot more about free agents right now, and RFAs right now, and you're hearing a lot more rumors and stuff. And, you know, other GMs, I know Ray Shero said he thinks offer sheeting is fair game. And I think you're starting to see now a shift in this dynamic of offer sheeting. And I don't know if we are going to see another offer sheet happen, but I definitely do think there is a lot of behind the scenes work going on. I mean, we've heard stuff about how Columbus is looking into Marner. You know, I think there's going to be a lot more talk about offer sheeting as we go forward. So I think Bergevin definitely kind of, you know, got the ball rolling, which I'm excited to see in the league.
Right. And this
Continue. Sorry. So I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, keep my eye on these two teams offer sheeting wise, because the Canadians are a very offer sheetable team in the coming years. And I wouldn't be surprised, you know, given the direction of this new Carolina Hurricanes front office, I wouldn't be surprised to see them, you know, step up and take a shot at an original six team and try to, you know, get a young star away from, you know, you got Ryan Poehling, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, just to name a few. You know, they've got plenty of restricted free agents on their own. So maybe a little bit of payback coming. I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised at that. I think that they are a couple years away, and I don't think necessarily that all these players will actually be here in a few years. I'm not saying that Poehling or Kotkaniemi are going to be on the move, but I definitely do think that over the next couple of years, there has to be some big changes in Montreal. They've got a lot of strong contracts with low value, high reward. But again, you know, they've got some players to pay coming up in the next few years. So I definitely think that you're going to have to start moving some guys. There's going to have to be some maybe trades that happen, because in the future they are going to be pressed for cap. And I think that at the end of the day, in order to pay these players, you're going to have to, you know, move some players. And I think you're starting to see that now with other teams around the league. And I think that's just a trend that's going to continue to happen. I mean, who was it? Nashville. They didn't have any RFAs they needed to sign, but they need to sign some guys. And what did that mean? Getting rid of a star player like PK Subban for nothing. Obviously, it wasn't the return they hoped, but, you know, in order, cap is important now. And in order to keep your players, you have to make some trades. Even if it's like getting rid of Subban for nothing, you gotta, you know, bite the bullet sometimes. And I think the Habs may be in this kind of situation in the next few years. And I wouldn't be surprised to see some of their bigger names get traded.
Right. And if we look at a team like the Leafs, they, for one, are a team pressed for cap. And speaking to this degree, this coming from Aaron Portsline of The Athletic just 2 days ago, many teams have spoken with Mitch Marner's agent about a possible offer sheet. And yes, CBJ, as in the Blue Jackets, are among them, but I see no indication Marner wants to leave Toronto. However, the Blue Jackets are convinced the Leafs would slash could match any offer sheet, perhaps by trading William Nylander. Anyways, again, we are early into the summer, and are we bound to see more offer sheets? That's a game of yes or no, but as the summer goes on, we will soon find out. As negotiations seem to be slow between Marner's agent, his family, and Kyle Dubas.
I mean, the three biggest players that we're going to hear about now is Marner, obviously, and there's Patrick Laine, who we can get into in a few minutes, and then Rantanen. Now, some people are saying, why don't they offer sheet Rantanen? Oh, there's also Point. But again, Point and Rantanen, I can't see signing an offer sheet. I think Point does want to stay in Tampa Bay, and I don't think that – I think I've heard he's been offered some contracts by other teams in regards to an offer sheet. He's not going to sign them. I think he wants to stay in Tampa Bay, and unless they really can't sign him, which I don't see happening, he's staying in Tampa Bay, really. As in regards to Rantanen, nobody's going to offer the four first-round picks to get Rantanen. I don't think that a team should pay for four first-round picks to get any player, and I just don't see it happening. I think whatever you're going to offer Rantanen, I think Colorado is going to match. They have the cap space, so I don't see that as a problem there. The only two real, I think, candidates for an offer sheet are Mitch Marner, who, again, wants to stay in Toronto, as we all know, and Patrick Laine.
Right, and again, this situation very much matching the one with Montreal and Marner. Anyways, it's something to keep an eye on, as a Puck Authority source informed us recently that Montreal is indeed vying to offer Marner an offer sheet. Whether that be in the days or weeks to come is unclear at this time. It'll be, again, starting to keep an eye
regardless on if that happens and if Montreal does offer Marner an offer sheet, which is what we may have heard, but I still don't see it. I don't see Marner taking that offer sheet. I mean, he wants to stay in Toronto, but even if he was willing to sign an offer sheet with another team, I can't see it being Montreal. I mean, Marner's a Toronto boy his whole life. He's grew up in the area. I can't see him going to the team's biggest rival in Montreal.
Right, and Marner coming from a hockey family, of course he is I'm sure he's getting near full about what his whereabout options may be. And for more on this, we go to Chase.
Yeah, I really think that Toronto is going to do everything that they can to keep Marner. And I think if it comes down to trading Nylander, then that might be what it is. And I've seen some people say that they might sign, you know, one of the pieces, they might be more willing to trade some of the pieces that they have, you know, just signed, and Andreas Janssen before that. But I mean, if you need to clear a large chunk of cap space, and you know, Nylander is still a desirable player despite the season that he had, you know, last year. And you know, speaking of, you know, that, I think that that's why teams are shying away from an offer sheet to Laine. Last season he was a definition of streaky. Mm-hmm. He had an incredible end of the fall and then just fell off a cliff. Yeah. So I really, you know, how much value do you put on that? What kind of cap, you know, do you give that? What do you sign that value to? Because if he's not going to be a productive player for your club at, you know, outside of like 3 months of the year, you know, how much is that really worth? So I think that I don't think that Laine will be receiving an offer sheet from anybody for that reason exactly. But, you know, you look at Marner, and I think there might be some teams that are willing to pay him that. But, you know, again, it's will he sign that offer sheet? I don't see him signing an offer sheet from Columbus unless the number is astronomically huge.
I have to say that if there is any RFA that would sign an offer sheet, I think it would be Laine. I mean, we've been hearing in the past couple of days that there's been some frustration between him and management and the locker room, but and he might want a bridge deal only with Winnipeg. But, you know, yes, Laine had a bad season. I mean, yes, he had 30 goals, but he was nowhere near the Laine that we've all come to, you know, know and love. But I don't think that saying that, you know, he's not worth, let's say, 8.5, or I think he will get offered a pretty high contract. And I think at the end of the day, some people may be surprised and pretty annoyed considering the season he had. But I think we have to consider, you know, he's one of the best goal scorers of his generation. I mean, you look at he's one of the fastest players in recent memory to hit 100 points. I mean, right up there with guys like Gretzky. I mean, I'm not trying to say he's anywhere near Gretzky, obviously, but I mean, look at his goal scoring. He's an elite goal scorer at the NHL. And I think you look at the season that he had, and there was a lot of inconsistency. I mean, who was his second line center? It was Brian Little. And I don't personally think that Brian Little is the right guy to have next to Laine. I think that Laine needs a more skilled guy. And then when, even when they put him next to Mark Scheifele, the chemistry just wasn't there. I think a change of scenery would actually be it wouldn't be bad for Laine at all. I think that actually might be what he needs to, you know, take his game to the next level and, you know, get back to what he was. I think that I think some teams may shy away, and I think this may be why an offer hasn't been reached even with Winnipeg yet, because they don't want to offer him as much as he's probably asking for. But I think that at the end of the day, it was one bad season, and he still had 30 goals.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds weird to say, but I really think that he is in the running, if not taking the prize for the worst 30-goal season in NHL history. You know, if you can, you know, it's crazy to think that you call that bad, but, you know, you look at him and like 80% of his goals came in a single month. So, you know, for me, my thoughts turn to why aren't guys like Tkachuk or why aren't guys like Besser getting the same kind of talks and the same kind of speculation then?
No, I think it's a very good point. I think maybe that, you know, maybe they're just not on the block. I feel like the teams know more, obviously, than we do. But I think that there's probably a lot of internal discussions that we obviously don't know about. And, you know, maybe I really don't know. I think maybe just in general, they're not. There's been talks maybe, but I think in general teams know that an offer sheet for these guys aren't going to work. I think when we're hearing so much about guys like Laine or Marner, I think that's because there's discussions and teams know that it's not likely that they're going to match. I think when you look at Vancouver or even with Tkachuk in Calgary, they know that these teams are going to match maybe. So there's just no point in even trying.
See, Vancouver's worked themselves into a nice little hole right now, though. They have a whole lot of cap space tied up in, you know, bottom six and depth defensive players. And they have, like, around $8 million in cap space, I think, right now to sign Besser. So they, if an offer sheet was presented to him for more than, you know, more space than they have right now, they'd have to make some trades in that 7-day period. They might be in trouble.
I mean, speaking of Vancouver, I still don't know how much I like the Tyler Myers deal. I've never been the biggest Tyler Myers fan. I mean, I do think, you know, he has the size for the NHL, and he's not a bad NHL player. He's a solid defenseman. I think they paid way too much for him. I think they're trying too hard to fix their blue line, and they're trying really hard to, you know, become a contender again, but, you know, they're not necessarily making the right moves. I mean, I love the Ferland edition, but I think that and I love the Jordy Benn edition. I thought that was a great deal, solid value, but I think the Myers edition was just, you know, they're really pushing it. They're trying to be a contender when, you know, I don't know if they're ready. I mean, I think they have a chance at contending this season, and I think, you know, Myers may help with that. But committing to Myers for how long was it? 5, 7 years, 6 years? Whatever it is, that's a long time to commit to him, especially when, you know, he's never been as good as he was in his rookie season. They're paying a hefty price, and they're going to have a lot of RFAs to sign in a few years. They're going to have Quinn Hughes. They're going to have Besser, who they should they're going to be trying to sign soon. They have Elias Pettersson. You know, they've got some players they're going to have to sign. And I think it's going to be a problem when you look at some of their guys like Myers. I think that's – they're really – you're right, digging themselves into a bit of a hole.
Yeah, and to, you know, they're really pushing themselves to be a contender right now, and they'd better be a contender because Tampa Bay has their first-round pick either this year or next year. And if it is next year, then it's not lottery-protected. So say they make the playoffs, you know, this year, then Tampa Bay gets their pick and good. But if they miss this year and then they miss next year, Tampa Bay could be looking at a high pick.
Exactly.
So they paid a high price for JT Miller, and for their sake, it had, you know, very well pay off in spades for him.
And, you know, with Tampa Bay trying to, you know, they have to make a little bit of cap space if they want it for points. And, you know, they're probably going to try to make a move or two here and there, maybe some smaller ones, but that extra pick they've got is huge, right? I mean, JT Miller was solid for the team, but they got a great value trade for him. And I think that first round pick could be huge in trying to maybe strengthen their team, maybe even trying to get some cap space. You know, they did good with that trade. And now I think they have a lot more freedom, especially with their draft pick. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they trade one of their draft picks. Now, when you look at the trade deadline, when first round picks are constantly being traded, now they have extra, extra power going into the trade deadline with two first round picks.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And to look at Tampa Bay's contract situation, they have to move more pieces out. It's as simple as that. Maybe not for this year. I think that they have enough cap space to get a point deal done, you know, but until pens to paper, that can't be sure. But next year, they're going to have a huge challenge because they have to sign Andre Vasilevsky and Mikhail Sergachev. And some early reports for some insiders have said that Vasilevsky could be looking for somewhere around $10 million. That's a huge number for a team like Tampa Bay, especially when you have. Yeah, I mean, I think I absolutely agree with you. I think, well, that's, I mean, $10 million is a lot for any goaltender, but you look at Vasilevsky's play and, you know, that team, I don't think that they are, I mean, I still think they have a phenomenal team, Vasilevsky, but man, he's done so much for them. They would be very, very hurt trying to find a new goaltender. And this is, you know, you got to remember, this is a Tampa Bay team who, before Bishop and Vasilevsky, they jumped around with goaltenders like crazy. So this is a team that now, after years and years of struggling to find consistent, solid goaltending, they finally have it. And a guy that looks like he could be a franchise guy. So they're going to, and, you know, they just don't have enough cap space right now to get Point, Vasilevsky, and Sergachev. So they'll have to move some pieces out. And I wouldn't be surprised unless, you know, unless that Vancouver pick turns into, you know, like a high lottery pick. I wouldn't be surprised seeing that move out along with some other pieces. They might have to dip in their prospect pool a little bit, but there will be some moves from Tampa Bay.
For sure. I think Tampa Bay is definitely going to be a team to watch, but I think that in general, you know, the salary cap is going to see a lot because of the salary cap and because of how much a lot of these RFAs are making. We're going to be seeing a lot of more high-end players on the move in the next few years. And I think that's definitely going to make for some more exciting trades and some more exciting hockey in general.
Yeah, it's going to be, again, something very interesting to keep an eye out for, not only with Tampa Bay, but around the league in general. But like you said, with Tampa Bay possibly seeking some cap space, seeking players such as Vasilevsky and what he's looking for contract-wise, as well as Sergachev, and will he stay or will he go? A bunch of interesting things to touch on there. But let's move around a little bit. Let's go to – how about we move on to the Nylander trade to Chicago recently for Henry Jokiharju and get the thoughts of both of you on the strength of Chicago's move there.
Well, I think it was last offseason, I actually wrote a piece on why the Buffalo Sabres need to trade Nylander. I said that, you know, Nylander right now is considered to be a top prospect and he still has a lot of value. He's a very highly valued player around the league, and people and teams would still surely give up a lot to get a guy like him. And it may have been a year late, but boy, did Buffalo finally get a solid return for him. I don't think they could have traded him and done and gotten a better return. I think that Yokiharu really solidifies a blue line, which they've worked really hard to strengthen. I really do like their blue line now overall, and I don't think that Nylander had a big future in Buffalo. I know he didn't have so much experience with the team already, but I mean, with the limited games he got, he just didn't look like there was a fit anytime soon. And I think that happens with a lot of, you know, highly drafted prospects. You see them, you know, they're not going to do anything where they are, where they were drafted. They need a change of scenery. And, you know, you could see Nylander now go to Chicago and thrive, or you could see him be a bust. You know, that's the kind of thing that happens with a lot of prospects like this. And I think that Buffalo anticipated that there was not going to be any space for him on this roster. He did not have a future in Buffalo, and they traded him for a great return. A young, solid defenseman who still has plenty more to give. I think that I know they're trying to trade Rasmus Ristolainen, which I'm not a big fan of that idea, but you know, even if you got rid of Ristolainen now, you just added a piece that could be your another key addition to the future of your blue line. I think they've significantly strengthened their blue line now with Dalin, Yokiharu. They've got Montour, and Colin Miller now. So I really like what they've done to their blue line.
Yeah, I really couldn't agree more with that. I think that, you know, if you look at Nylander, some people are already starting to call him a bust. I don't, you know, I think it's still a little bit too early to call him a bust for sure, but I think that he certainly wasn't yielding the return that Buffalo expected from an 8th overall pick yet. I think that they got a great, you know, right-handed defenseman, especially young ones. I think Yokiharu is all of 19. Mm-hmm. I think that that's something that is really treasured in the league, it's really coveted, because you don't see, you know, teams with an excess of right-handed defensemen like Buffalo has. And they, I think that the Blackhawks were trading from a position of excess. You know, they have a lot of defensemen that are skilled. I really think they could have gotten a better return for Yokiharu. I really think that the return could have been more than just Nylander's, you know, one for one. And, you know, you see, you know, this team, this Chicago team recently, they've shown that they bet on skill very heavily. So, you know, you see that, you saw that in the pick of Alex DeBrincat. A lot of teams shied away from him because of his size, but he had great stats his junior career, and he's tearing it up for him now. Then you saw it this year with their trade for Dylan Strome, you know, down seasons, not producing for the Coyotes like they wanted him to. He goes over there and he flourishes. And you, I think you saw it again with the pick of Kirby Dach at number 3. I think that, you know, a lot of people consider that a reach, but he was their guy, you know, 73 points in 62 games with the Blades. I think that that could pay off for them. And I think that they're doing the same thing with Nylander. You know, he's a player that has a great shot. Mm-hmm. It's just everything else that needs to be worked on. I think that they say, okay, this guy's got some skill. We can work out the rest. We can iron out the rest. It's too early to say, you know, if they'll be able to actually do that. Mm-hmm. But I'm inclined to say that Buffalo will win this trade and that Nylander won't quite yield the return that they're hoping for. I'm not thinking that he's going to stick around on that roster for very long.
Another thing I heard Chicago was thinking is, they liked the defensive prospects they had, and they felt that they were already farther along in their development than Yokiharu was. And it, even though Yokiharu's played most of the season in the NHL, so with Ian Mitchell, Nicholas Budin, and most notably Adam Boqvist, I think that they were pretty confident in the defensive future of their team, that they didn't see fit for Yokiharu. What I don't know if I understand, though, is they have some solid forward prospects too. I mean, it's not like they needed Nylander for their prospect pool. They didn't need that addition of a new forward to their prospect pool. I mean, they just had the 3rd overall pick and added Kirby Dach. You know, they have had some great value forward prospects in guys like Philip Kurashev, you know, Nicholas Norgren. So I don't know if I understand the reason why they were so fast to make this trade, and why, you know, I definitely think they could have gotten a better deal. They probably could have gotten, you know, a pick and a prospect, but I mean, they're confident with their defense, and I think Blackhawks fans just have to trust that, you know, the future of their blue line is solid even without Joakim Harri, and that Nylander does have potential, and that, you know, there is going to be a place for him on this roster in the next year or two. Another thing that I think would kind of be a little interesting to talk about regarding the draft would be the fourth overall pick, which was Alex Turcotte, if I'm not mistaken. Now, Turcotte, he comes from a NHL family. I mean, he has a sibling, his siblings all play hockey. His father had a couple games in the NHL. Oh, I'm sorry. I meant fifth overall, Alex Turcotte. Turcotte, now, I was actually a bit surprised that he did fall to fifth overall. I actually thought that Chicago would go with Turcotte, considering that, you know, Turcotte's a Chicago-born, he's a Chicago native. I mean, he had a lot of to be the third overall pick. I mean, a lot of people were surprised to see Dak selected ahead of him. Now, Colorado, they valued defensemen instead of Turcotte, which was, again, somewhat surprising considering they have Connor Timmins and Cal Makar. LA got a steal in Turcotte. And although, you know, they might not need centers considering they've got Vilardi, who his career is in jeopardy, but they've also got Anderson Dolan and they've got Rasmus Kapuri. I mean, they took the best player available by a mile. I mean, I expected it to maybe be Byram falling to number five, or maybe getting a guy like Cousins or Dak over there. But they were very lucky in the fact that the two teams above them took Byram and Dak, because they got a guy who has the potential to, if he is probably only a year or two away, I'd say probably a year away from the NHL. And I think with the guidance of a guy like Anze Kopitar, Turcotte could learn a lot, and he could come in and right away place a guy like Jeff Carter. And I think that's going to be very big for the organization.
All right, let's delve into another another deal going on. Let's move on to Toronto, but in another way away from Marner, where Nazem Kadri was recently traded to the Colorado Avalanche in exchange for Tyson Barrie and Alexander Kerfoot. How do we feel that this trade went down? Looking from this trade on Toronto's end out, and what they received from Colorado in exchange for the veteran who they have had problems with both on and off the ice as of late.
I think Toronto got exactly what they wanted. I mean, they got a top defenseman in Tyson Barrie, who, yeah, they're probably going to have some problems next season in free agency with him, because he's asking for an AAV of $8 million, and obviously that might be a bit of a problem. But for this season, they definitely got a guy who's going to really help their team. And then they got Alex Kerfoot. Now, I don't think Kadri, I think he was too good to be a third line center. Kerfoot, however, he fits there perfectly. He is a third line center that could handle playing top 6 minutes as well. So having Kerfoot there is going to be big for the team. I think that he could provide solid. He's perfect bang for buck. You know, he's going to produce for the amount of money that he costs. Right. I don't think the Leafs could have asked for a better return. I mean, Barry's definitely going to help solidify this blue line that the Leafs did a great job improving. I think their blue line has taken a major turn. I mean, they got rid of Zaitsev, and Gardner doesn't look to be coming back. What do they get instead? They have CeCe, Morgan Riley, I mean, Travis Dermott, Barrie, Muzzin. I think it looks great, and I'm really excited for the future, as well as potentially Timothy Liljegren or Rasmus Sandin, who could be coming in this year.
Right, and CeCe coming over from Toronto or from Ottawa to Toronto in exchange for both Connor Brown and Nikita Zaitsev. Zaitsev, who couldn't figure out a deal with Toronto, and Connor Brown as an additional piece of the trade.
You know, I'm really not as convinced as you guys are about this trade for Toronto. I'm going to be honest with you. I think Colorado absolutely wins this trade every day of the week. So, you know, you look at the Avalanche And I think that you give it 2 years and they will easily have the best defensive core in the National Hockey League. The prospects that they have and the talent they already have on that team, you know, like you said, Connor Timmins, you know, Cale Makar, you have Sam Girard, and now you have Bowen Byram. That is so much talent right there. Sure. And then you look into next year. Barry is going to be an unrestricted free agent. Obviously, they didn't think they were going to sign him. And then you look a little bit farther down the road, you have the expansion draft. Barry was expendable at this point. And Nazem Kadri has an absolute bargain of a contract. He makes just over $4 million. And for the role that he's going to play on that Colorado team, that's a steal. Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely what they needed. They need Colorado really needs forward depth. They have one of the best top lines that you can think of in the National Hockey League in Rantanen and Landeskog and MacKinnon. And then now you're adding depth to that. And I think that – so obviously Barry wasn't in the top – their long-term plans. But you can't think that Barry's in Toronto's long-term plans either. You know, if he's looking for an 8x8, Toronto's not going to be able to give him that. Sure. So they gave up all of this for 1 year of Tyson Barry. And I'm going to be honest with you. If you know, Toronto fans, if you had a problem with Gardner, you're going to have some of the same problems with Tyson Barry. Barry's an offensive defenseman, and, you know, sometimes he's not quite as responsible in his own end. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see which defenseman the Maple Leafs fans choose to, you know, latch onto and do their best to run out of town this year. But I think that this trade pays off for Colorado now and later.
I think for sure. I agree that Colorado definitely got a great return from this trade. I mean, they got the player that they wanted in Kadri. I think he's a perfect second line center, complete bargain of a contract. I don't think they could have gone wrong there. And I agree in the sense that Barry probably isn't in the team's long-term plans for sure. I think they definitely improved their blue line, which was their biggest weakness this season. Their blue line is definitely improved for this season than from what it was last season. I think that the Kerfoot contract, you know, Kadri was too good to be a third line winger, and he wasn't going to be moving up unless there was an injury because of Tavares and Matthews, right? I don't think that it made sense keeping him, right? I think that he was too good for his role, and I think that a guy like Kerfoot is a on the third line in Toronto is a lot better than having him on the second line in Colorado. I think that the only thing I don't love in Colorado's standpoint is Cal Rosen, who, I mean, look, he's still got some potential, but I don't think he's going to do that much for the team, really. The reason why I like this trade so much for Toronto is because it improves the team for next season. You know, Toronto wants to win now, and I think that's what this trade does.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is at the end of the day, really. It's a year-long rental of Barry, and I think they paid a very high price for a year-long rental of, you know, they got their, you know, their right-handed defenseman, their top-pairing guy, and that's great. But, you know, what are you going to do next year? You know, when, you know, this time next year, say they don't win the Stanley Cup, you know, what now? Because he's walking because you can't pay him. And, you know, I think it's a little bit too early to give up on Rosen. I think that he, you know, could produce. I think that he could be a solid addition for Colorado. But, you know, I mean, obviously, this is the price tag that a guy like Barry has. I mean, I'm not saying that this is, you know, an underpay or an overpayment, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, it seems that unless, you know, Toronto is planning some big moves, you know, they're not planning on keeping him after this year. And they did give up a pretty substantial amount and a very good contract for, you know, just a year.
I agree. The only thing is, I think that Dubas, I don't think he wants a defenseman that has a lot more term. I mean, what about the other contract that Kadri declined, or the other trade that Kadri declined? That was to Calgary, and that was T.J. Brody, right? And T.J. Brody, again, he's a UFA next season. So I don't think that Dubas is actually looking at a long-term player for the team. I think he wants to see how things go, and with his current defensive prospects like Liljegren and Sandin, who have a lot of promise, I think he wants to play next season out, see what his team does, and then work with his cap space and see what he's going to do. Because now you've got Muzzin, Barry, and CeCe that are all going to be needing new contracts. You've also got some. I think that Liljegren and Sandin will be ready for the NHL for sure next season. So I think that now he gets to see what he wants to do. Maybe that means trading somebody at the trade deadline. Or, you know, I think that he doesn't want any big commitments. He doesn't want to have to deal with the stress of trying to push one of his contracts to make room, right? I think that when he knows that a guy like Barry is going to be a lot of money, and he knows whatever big defenseman that he gets from a trade is going to be a lot of money that he may not be able to afford. I think he's trying to see what he can get to improve this season and then kind of build from within the next season.
Right. And to that degree, let's move on to another perhaps interesting, but I guess slightly less detailed move with the San Jose Sharks re-signing Kevin LeBlanc to a one-year, $1 million deal, and how we feel about that cheap contract bringing in the return. And for more on that, let's go to David, who recently wrote about this here for us at the Puck Authority.
I think my piece on LeBlanc signing that extension with the Sharks was titled, LeBlanc just did the Sharks the biggest favor he could have done. And that's because, really, he did. I mean, with his signing, the Sharks still have a little bit over $5 million in cap space. That $5 million in cap space is big for the Sharks. They can use that to improve the team after they've lost a couple big names. Like, not huge names, but they've lost some – well, they've lost Pavelski, which is obviously a huge name. But they've potentially lost Thornton, and they lost Donskoy as well. You know, they now have a little bit of room to add in some depth, maybe make some trades. But what I think that this trade really did, I mean, this extension really did, was it gives the Sharks a chance to plan out their roster and allow them to make the necessary room they need to do for next season. Because the next contract that LeBlanc signs, it's not going to be a $1 million deal. He deserves a lot more money, and I think the Sharks know that, and LeBlanc knows that. He did them a favor by signing for only $1 million, and I think that this favor gives the Sharks a chance to strengthen their team this season, but it also gives them a strength to plan their future cap-wise for next season to pay him what he deserves without having to make a lot of trades to destroy their team. This team has a lot of holes to fill, and I think that, you know, $5 million may not seem like a lot, but it gives them a little bit of, you know, leverage. There's a lot of teams that are trying to, you know, shed some salary cap. And with that extra $5 million, it helps. It's not like they can take on a massive, massive contract, but it gives them room to kind of add in some maybe 1 year contracts or something that they need to help fix their team for the upcoming season. But it also gives them a whole year now to plan out their future and, you know, how much and allocate space to pay guys like LeBlanc. So, personally, I think that is, on the bank standpoint, though, it's one of the best deals in the NHL by the Sharks. They completely won. And although it's only 1 year, that's a one-year deal for a guy that can be a 60, even 70-point player. I mean, he had 56 points while only averaging 14 minutes and 1 second per night. Yes, he got power play time, but imagine how much that's going to increase once he moves to the top six. He was playing just over 14 minutes a night on the third pairing. I'm excited to see what happens when he gets larger amounts of minutes and more skilled line mates.
I mean, man, talk about betting on yourself, right? I mean, this guy put up, like you said, almost 60 points this year, and he's going to sign a one by one. You know, that's a bridge for, you know, a pretty, you know, a decent prospect that you want to see, you know, is he worth, you know, signing longer term? But man, this guy, he's a big part of your offense. And, you know, people, you know, you might not remember, but he was the hero of that, the infamous Game 7 against the Golden Knights. He had 4 points in that last little run to move them on to the next round. I mean, if you know, if it wasn't for him, then that wouldn't have happened. But, you know, I wonder, you know, it makes you think, you know, you wonder if there was some kind of handshake deal that was done right as, you know, the pen was put to paper. And like you touched on, you know, the organization says, you know, you do us this solid this year and we'll take care of you next year. You know, and then, you know, you look at this $5 million of space that they have, you know, Thornton hasn't retired yet. He still wants to come back. So, you know, you maybe wonder if he takes, you know, a similar kind of deal, you know, short term, you know, not a huge cap hit, and they, you know, give it one last real good go. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, this is a guy, if he produces like this again next year in an expanded role, and you know, even ups his production, he could be seeing a rather large pay increase. But I think that, you know, this is a, you know, good commitment by LeBanc. You know, he's saying, you know, I like the Sharks. I want to help him out here. You know, I see this bigger, you know, team structure aside from my cap hit. And I see that, you know, we need some other, you know, we need some more room. And I can do my part this year and I'll, you know, get mine next year.
Mm-hmm. Needless to say, pretty unselfish on his part.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was shocked by that deal. And I think one thing that I really noticed about LeBanc is his shooting ability. I mean, he only had, I think, 17 goals, but he was an absolute sniper. And I think that next year you're going to see him score a lot more goals with the new expanded role with the team. He's going to get a lot more opportunities to shoot, and he's going to be on a line with better playmakers. So I think we're going to see a whole new level of LeBanc, if that's even possible. So it's going to be interesting what happens with him.
All right, let's move on to the New York Islanders, who recently signed Anders Lee to a 7-year deal. That going along with the busy free agency period. We can start with David and the upside to that, as Lee was fielding multiple offers and chose to go back to the Barclays Center in Brooklyn all long term.
If the Islanders lost Lee, their franchise would have been in trouble. I mean, you can't lose two captains 2 years in a row in free agency. That is just going to destroy your fan base. I mean, we saw the turmoil after they lost Tavares, and you know, the Islanders got lucky that they were as good as they were last season. And obviously they wouldn't be where they were last season if it wasn't for Lee. Now they might have a bit of trouble replicating their success last season again this season, especially with Leonard gone. And I know they signed Varlamov, but I mean, Varlamov is a very up and down goaltender. Leonard was very solid last season, so I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with them. And some do consider the Lee deal to be a bit of an overpay, but I think you have to look at it from a business standpoint. The Islanders cannot afford to lose Lee. It would destroy their fan base, right? They had to sign him, and even if it was an overpay, which I'm not saying it is, but even if it was, they had no choice. I think they had to do that.
Yeah, and the Islanders were one of those teams that you saw in the race for Panarin until the very, very end. You know, they were one of those teams that, you know, their name got brought up, and eventually when he signed, you know, with the other New York team, I think that they were, you know, holding out their money for Panarin, and then when they didn't get Panarin, Lee was their consolation prize. Yeah. And, you know, I'm surprised that Lee, you know, was okay to go along with that. Mm-hmm. You know, to really kind of be the second choice in that scenario, you know, being their, you know, their past, you know, last year's captain. And I really don't think that the Islanders as a whole got better this year. I think they if anything, moved down a bit. I think that Varlamov is you know, by no stretch of the imagination's a upgrade over Leonard. And I think that they really botched Leonard's entire contract situation. You know, this is a goalie who was publicly said that he loved the island. He loved the fan base. He loved this team. You know, he loved that they gave him a second chance and he loved playing for him. And they didn't want to pay the guy. I think that, you know, especially for a team with cap space like the Islanders, that's a big misstep. I mean, are you really betting on your goaltending prospects that much to say, like, no, we'll just get a bridge of Varlamov and then we'll be fine? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that they really kind of botched this offseason a little bit. And I'm not a fan of the moves that they have made. I know that might, you know, ruffle a few Islanders fans' feathers, but, you know, bringing Lee back, you know, bring back a piece that you already had, I don't think Varlamov's not an upgrade over Leonard. I don't think that they've really improved any position by a substantial amount.
Sure. I agree with that.
I absolutely agree with you.
I think one interesting thing is they have one of the best goaltending prospects in the NHL in Ilya Sorokin. The question is, though, he's under contract in the KHL. When can they bring him over? And if they feel like maybe they felt on the inside that they think that he's going to come over sooner rather than later, they're probably going to have to give him the starting goaltender job pretty soon, right? He's been the starting goaltender in the KHL for one of the best teams for a while now, and he has been outstanding. So I think that maybe probably something that was going through their heads was, you know, we can't afford to sign Lednar long term if we have Sorokin coming. I just don't understand, though, if that was the case, why they would sign Varlamov for such a large extension.
And it's not even like Lenner signed for term with Chicago.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's not even like he demanded a long term. You know, it was basically what they did was they just swapped Lenner out for Varlamov. And I don't see how anyone can. I mean, maybe they know something in the end, you know, in the organization, but I don't see how that's an upgrade. And I don't see how spending that, you know, extra million or so is not worth it.
I agree with you 100% there. I think that Varlamov is a solid goaltender, but he's very streaky. I mean, there are times when he's one of the best goaltenders, and then there's times when he is just terrible, right? I mean, you saw in the playoffs, he wasn't even their starter, right?
Yeah, Colorado didn't feel confident with him, so they made a trade for Grubauer. Grubauer took over the net. He took over the starting job from Varlamov, and then he just walked in free agency. You know, so this was, you know, and he's been with Colorado for a while, and the Avs looked at him and said, you know, we think that we have a better option now. We traded for a better option. And I think that, you know, no one will argue that, you know, comparing seasons. I mean, just last year alone, that Lenner had far and away had the better season.
For sure. I think, you know, I think that's going to be one of the biggest factors in the Islanders season this year. It's going to be the goaltending, and last year it was arguably the biggest factor was Lenner and Greece kept them in, you know, contention for the playoffs, and they were the big reason why they went as far as they did. And I think that if Varlamov can succeed and kind of fill in that void, it's going to look great. But if he slips up, they're going to look like one of the biggest losers of free agency, and they already don't come out of free agency looking too good right now. So I think that this is going to be huge for them. A lot of this rests on Varlamov's shoulders.
All right, and as we look to wrap things up, let's move on to where backpedaling a little bit. Matt Duchene going to the Nashville Predators after talks of him going to the Montreal Canadiens. With credit to David Pegnaud of the fourth period, but Duchene again ultimately landing in Nashville after PK Subban was sent out to the Devils. What are our thoughts there?
Solid move for the team. I mean, they now definitely improve their offensive core, but I mean, this comes at the cost of getting rid of Subban, because I don't think if they didn't get Duchene, Subban would still be on the team, right? They took the money that they spent a lot of they lost Subban in the hopes of not only signing Duchene, but also for signing Roman Josi. And obviously, Josi is very important to keep on the team. But the real question is going to be, how does their blue line look? And even without Subban, they still have a great blue line. And they got Dante Fabbro coming up full-time next season, most likely, who already looks like he could be a solid player in the NHL. So I think, you know, Fabbro, he'll get a solid role with the team. And he's probably, if he looks pretty good, then I don't think Nashville fans are going to be missing Subban too much. And I think people are going to be very happy with the Duchene deal. And I think Duchene definitely is a good addition to the team. I mean, now with a center core of Duchene and Forsberg, your team looks great. I think the biggest question now is, what do you do with Kyle Turris? That's $6 million they're spending on a guy who's going to be their third line center. I mean, I definitely think that they are going to have to try to trade him. And I know it might be pretty difficult to do so. They might even have to retain some salary. But I think trading Turris is going to be a big priority for the team right now.
Yeah, I think that's what really sparked this trade. You know, this signing. I think it's really what made Nashville want to go after their country music star. You know, well known in the locker room that Duchene is quite the guitar player, and he enjoys country music, so it's a perfect fit, I think, you know, as far as it goes for Duchene and his family. But I really, you know, if you look back at Nashville's expectations for Kyle Turris when they acquired him, he's not lived up to those at all. He's not the centerman that they were hoping. You know, I don't think that they were confident running him behind Johansson. And I think that Duchene fills this role perfectly for him. I think that now, you know, that's just another, you know, lethal forward piece on a very competitive team. And yes, you lose a very talented offensive defenseman in PK Subban, but it's not like Nashville's blue line is, you know, still one of, you know, is suddenly one of the least talented in the NHL. I still think they have one of the best blue lines, you know, the best defensive core in the National Hockey League. So I think that this is a great signing for Nashville. I think that both sides got what they want, and that's very important in free agency and, you know, for a good fit there.
For sure. I think that I think you're right in that sense that their blue line still looks good. And I'm intrigued to see what Dante Fabro does next season. He'll probably right from the bat be getting a pretty, pretty big role with the team. I mean, as you'll have probably Ekholm or Ellis moving up. And I think that you're going to be seeing Fabro make a pretty decent jump. So I think that he's definitely going, if he impresses next season, which I think he will, I think that, you know, trading Subban, I don't even think Nashville fans are going to remember. I don't mean that literally. Obviously, they're going to remember losing him, but I mean that, you know, the it won't hurt that much, because I think Fabro has what it takes to really replace Subban for the future.
Yeah. So I know that we're wrapping up here, but there are two teams that I want to touch on quickly before we go. Yeah. The first one is the Arizona Coyotes, and the second one is the Minnesota Wild. The Coyotes did great in getting themselves Phil Kessel. They traded Galchenyuk, who didn't have, you know, quite the season that they hoped for. You know, Domi had himself a great year in Montreal. Galchenyuk, not so much in Arizona. And I will say that was an injury-ravaged team. You know, I've never seen a team get hit with so many impactful injuries as Arizona did last year. It was incredible.
They still did. They were very close to making the playoffs last year, despite all the injuries that they faced. And I think that one thing I love about that deal is they didn't lose a first-round pick, because Arizona might not be great next season. Even with Kessel, they might still need another year. And if they do need that year of still adjusting and, you know, getting back into things, they still have that first-round pick, which will has a good solid chance of being a lottery pick. So
brings exactly to that team what they need. He's a pure goal scorer. He is an absolutely talented goal scorer, and that, you know, you can count on him to produce pretty close to or at a point per game. Perfect. You know, every year. That's exactly what Arizona needs. And their season ticket sales gone up some 550%, I think the number was.
Somewhere very close to that, as I was just going to bring that up, actually. That goes to show the big impact that not only Kessel has had in his career with the team, but that this team already, both the fan base and his now new teammates as well, are looking for him to bring when the season begins.
He has a persona about him. You know, he has, you know, Phil the Thrill. You know, everybody knows him as, you know, maybe people say, you know, Hot Dog Phil, but people know him. He's a big name that's coming to, you know, what is relatively a smaller market in Arizona. That's exactly what they need. It's star power. You know, it's a star player and a name player to come in and help, you know, Ekman Larson and Clayton Keller, and, you know, you know, even adding Nick Schmaltz and, you know, a young centerman and Christian Dvorak, who both battled injuries last year. If this Arizona team can stay healthy, I wouldn't be surprised to see them competing for a playoff spot.
For sure. Honestly, I think that the one thing Arizona lacked, I think, was that big name star, like you said. And I think Kessel is going to do wonders for this team. I think that we will probably see him produce at around a point per game pace. And I really think that, you know, with Kessel there, they've got what it takes to take that next step. I think they're ready with Ekman Larson, Jacob Trickerin, Clayton Keller, Dvorak. If Antti Raanta's healthy, they'll have him too. I think they're ready to start making that next push.
Yeah, and I don't think that it's going to be any problem inserting Kessel into the lineup and into this locker room, because he has a great relationship with head coach Rick Tocchet.
For sure.
He has a great relationship from their days in Pittsburgh together. And that's because you've got to think, remember, Kessel has a modified no trade clause, and he had to specify the teams that he wanted to get traded to, and Arizona was on that list. You know, people would say, you might think, why would he want to go to this team that isn't a contender? But, you know, that's because he loves the coach and he believes in what they have. So I don't think that it's going to be any problem slotting him into the lineup, and that he's going to be is going to be a home run trade for the Coyotes.
For sure. I really like what they did there. And even though they might have lost a solid prospect in Pierre Oliver Joseph, I think that, you know what, for a guy like Kessel, I don't think you can complain there. sometimes you just got to give up talent, some young talent, if you want to get a star name like Kessel.
So now on the other end of my spectrum is Minnesota. Oh, man, I really don't understand what they're doing with this Zuccarello signing. It's money, it's term, it's exactly what they need to get away from their older players with, you know, a higher cap hit in a long term. That's what they're being held down by in Parise and Suter. And I think that Parise's contract is more of an anchor for them right now than Ryan Suter's is. But what do? They go and give themselves another one in free agency. You know, it was really complimentative of their deadline moves. I think that they did great to get themselves Ryan Donato. I think they did great to get themselves Kevin Fiala. That's young, you know, playmakers, young goal scorers. I think that Luke Kunin is going to be great for them. I think that Jordan Greenway has the potential to be great for him. I think they have a solid blue line, but man, they've, you know, shot themselves in the foot when dealing with their salary cap here. And if you want to see one of the strangest interviews that you've ever seen, go look at the interview that came right after Zuccarello was signed. The comments where he's like a lizard. He likes how he's like a lizard out on the ice. What does that even mean? What is the goal here?
I mean, look, I've always loved Zuccarello. I think he's a great player. I do agree with the fact that they are trying to get younger and they're trying to rid themselves with contracts. I mean, we saw them try to trade Eric Staal last season at the trade deadline. They're clearly trying to get away from contracts like Zuccarello's. So it is a little odd on why they would try so hard to acquire him and give them the term and the money. I do think that he's a great addition to the team. I do really like Zuccarello, and I think, you know, he has what the team needs going forward. I do agree that it was a bit surprising to see them sign a big name like Zuccarello and see them give so much money in term. I do like the addition, however. I do agree with you. I think it was a little surprising to see them do that.
So, I mean, you look at Minnesota. Yeah, I mean, they're the team that's in the middle of a soft rebuild of sorts. You know, they're trying to get younger. They're trying to offload some contracts. They're trying to retool a little bit. And then they go off and make, you know, like they make a signing like they're a contender. And, you know, looking at their roster and looking at the division they're in, I don't think that they're contenders. I think this is a great deal for Zuccarello. It's money in term, and that's exactly what you want when you're an older player in the NHL. But
for sure,
I don't think that it fits any of the molds that the Wild are trying to go after. You know, so are they saying that they're trying to contend, saying that they're trying to rebuild? So are they trying to offload the contracts like, you know, Parise's and Staal's, or are they trying to add, you know, more, you know, front load the talent and get right up against the cap and try to contend? I don't think that, I mean, from what the moves they've been making, I'm not entirely sure that they know, to be honest.
No, I do agree there. I think that they're sending a lot of mixed signals. I mean, they're trying to trade some of their players to acquire younger guys, and they're trying to get rid of a lot of their older players, but then they're making this kind of signing, and that kind of sends a lot of mixed signals. I mean, what are they trying to do? When you do, they're doing a lot of things that kind of completely contradict each other. So
yeah, one step forward, two steps back on this rebuild, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is a little weird for sure.
And that'll be the question that we continue to ask ourselves. General manager Paul Fenton continues to work around that question as to whether this is a rebuild or whether this is something that he sees as a team that he can quickly form into a contender, as he said. But Zuccarello, indeed, a good signing for the Wild. Just a question as of where do they go from here based on how they see themselves from this point onwards. Anyone else with any last-minute notes to add here before we bring it to a close?
I think that's it for me.
Yeah, I think I'm good.
All right, and that concludes episode one of edition two of the Puck Authority podcast. My thanks to David and Chase for joining us this evening, talking all sorts of NHL free agency offer sheets and much, much more. Feel free to follow our work at thepuckauthority.com. Chase's latest piece to be up probably by the same time as this recording could be later Monday. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at the Puck Authority. And again, thank you to David and Chase. And my name is Justin Levine, managing editor of thepuckauthority.com. Thank you for listening.